now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, welcome into IUP Plus today. This is our streaming show on News for Utah Plus. This is where we take inside Utah politics and go beyond the headlines.
Behind the scenes.
Behind the headlines.
Behind the headlines, yeah. Behind the scenes, and beyond the headlines. Whatever you would like to call it, that's what we do here. We're grateful that you're with us, wherever you're finding us. Appreciate it. Hope you would share with your friends, because this is the best Utah political show in the state. But I'm biased. Let's talk to our panelists today. Hi, guys. Tell me who you are.
Hi. Please, Professor.
I'm Leah Murray, professor at Weber State University. Love talking politics with you, Lindsay.
I'm still getting used to these boxes, and it's really hard not to kind of look to the side outside of my box. Thank you. That is distracting.
If you're just listening to this, I'm poking Taylor.
Yes.
Literally poking
her. And she will metaphorically soon as well. Taylor Morgan, partner at Morgan May Public Affairs, local campaign consulting lobbying firm.
Glad to have you both here. Producer Peter's here as well. Hi, Producer Peter.
Hi, everybody.
Peter has a brand new desk. I do.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm so jealous.
I wish I could show them. I don't know that I have a camera for that. I was going to reveal, we do have our panelists start poking each other camera. that makes this just a lot more.
Is this
more
our pee-pee
visually
camera? Is that what that is, Peter?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. I hadn't worked on the acronym yet, but I like that one.
Yeah, let's keep it with pee-pee.
Yeah, let's go with that. All right. On that note, let's start in, shall we? We've got a lot to talk about today in not only Utah politics, but national politics as well. As we are recording this show, we are just hours away from a possible government shutdown, and there are no real signs or reporting that Republicans and Democrats are going to come to an agreement, and it is seeming more and more likely by the moment that the government is going to shut down. So if you watch this and you already know what happens with the government, good for you. But we're going to talk about kind of why it's shutting down at this point. So Taylor, let's start with you. Republicans are kind of being sticklers to their point here that they don't want any additional things in the budget package, and Democrats are saying we want to claw back some of the health care provisions that we lost in the Big Beautiful Bill. We also want some Medicaid issues funded. But Republicans seem to be blaming Democrats for the shutdown because they're asking for a lot. What do you think is going on here?
I mean, another clear example of how Congress is totally broken and dysfunctional. Now, in this one instance, we have, in my opinion, Democrats behaving poorly with the continuing resolution in the House here. Republicans are saying, well, we just want a clean extension of the budget package to get us through the next month. Democrats are insisting on, dealing with these expiring subsidies of the Affordable Care Act. Also, they want to put back some of the cuts to Medicaid funding that were involved in the Big Beautiful Bill that did pass Congress this summer. So both sides are to blame here. Let's be honest. Republicans have done exactly what the Democrats are trying to do right now many, many times in the past. So neither side has the moral high ground here, similar to almost any issue in Congress. In this instance, the subsidies involved with the Affordable Care Act, the caps on the price of plans for higher income earners, that is, I think, a real issue. I think Democrats have a valid concern here. Healthcare premiums could skyrocket. We're talking increases as much as 75% to premiums if indeed these subsidies of the Affordable Care Act are not extended. I think that's a real concern, especially in an economy where inflation and the cost of healthcare are already out of control and Americans are feeling those costs. I would hope that Democrats would simply keep these issues separate. You can fight for the extension of the subsidies, but you can also vote to pass the continuing resolution and come back another day to that issue. Well, let's not sacrifice the operations of the government for any one issue.
Leah, do you see it that way? Do you feel like Democrats are at fault here because they're kind of asking for the world here? Meanwhile, Republicans are saying, no, you can't have any of this right now, at least.
No, in a little bit, I want to just say how much fun it is to be having a normal political conversation. So how many times have we discussed government shutdowns and where the parties can't get on the same page and the branches of government are misbehaving over the budget? And a little bit, Lindsay and Taylor, what I want to say is a little more normal political conversation about policy is probably wonderful. Well, let's just like take all the temperature down to this kind of conversation. I think I disagree with Taylor's take on this a little bit. I think that Democrats think back the last time they negotiated, and I think a lot of Democrats in Congress felt like Schumer gave in to Donald Trump earlier this year. And then President Trump came out and did the rescissions packages, right, where he was just cutting stuff that was not part of an early conversation around the budget. Does feel a little, I take Taylor's point that no one has the moral high ground, but I do think from the Democratic point of view, they're like, we negotiated, we compromised last time. Some of our leadership took it like on the chin for that compromise. And then you rolled in this summer and just did rescission packages, right? Just wiping out things. And a little bit, you were not operating in good faith in the way that you behaved the last time we had the conversation. So a little bit, I think it makes sense for them to hold the ground here.
Taylor, I've seen it called the Schumer shutdown. The White House posted a ticking clock down to the Democrats' shutdown, right? So Republicans are really taking aim at the Democrats here, and we've kind of discussed why. But why do you think that Congress and the Republicans who control the House, the Senate, and the White House have not come to a compromise here? Because as we know in politics, the pendulum always swings and somebody else is going to be in power sometime.
Yeah. Well, I think, Lindsay, unfortunately, Democrats really do stand to gain potentially politically ahead of the midterm elections by holding their ground on this, as Leah mentioned. I think by staking their claim and coming out against Schumer, against leadership and those concessions earlier this summer, I think Democrats are potentially making their case and standing their ground on that issue. Now, it's a dicey political move here, because whether or not that will benefit Democrats or harm them more in voters' minds going into the midterm election, I can't say, right? Voters may punish Democrats for a government shutdown here, or this may be the opportunity for Democrats to actually make these issues high profile, to articulate, you know, what they're trying to do as a party, their platform in Congress on behalf of voters and the cost of healthcare. So again, it's a roll of the dice politically, but I don't blame Democrats for what they're trying to do from a strategic perspective.
Leah, do you think Democrats here, this is the only leverage they have potentially when the Republicans control all the chambers of Congress or
right.
all no, the I branches mean, of government, excuse me?
Yeah, I mean, Republicans control all of the branches, mm-hmm. you know, like not right? And then also, like I said, the president has shown himself willing to use rescission packages to just kind of go around any budget budget negotiations earlier. And I also think, and Taylor might disagree with me, Democrats would have seen that the numbers for the generic congressional ballot looks really good for Democrats. If they can put front and center, hey, the Republicans in charge of government decided to shut down the government. Remember that last year. Hey, when we did that, we also cut like 300,000 people who worked for the Department of Defense or War, whatever they're calling it. Right. Hey, we also cut all these people who worked in the CDC as we rolled right up into a flu season. I mean, like politically, it's not a good look to be shutting down the government ever. Like voters, I think, always say that that's not a good idea. So I just have to think this is, you know, going to benefit Democrats for the next election coming.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. A lot of it will depend on the implications, how long it lasts, voter perceptions already in a tough economy. Will voters understand what's happening and why? I'm not sure that I have a lot of confidence in that. At the same time, look, I think what we're seeing here is that the tool of shutting down the government, this is just another legislative and political tactic now. I remember back in the halcyon days of John Boehner, shutting down the government was unheard of. And this was a big deal, and it was outrageous. This seems to happen every few months now, every year, every quarter. Here we are. Today's the last day of the fiscal year, right? And we're talking about a midnight deadline to avoid a government shutdown. Again, seems like another Tuesday. So shutting down the government is, unfortunately, has become a very routine political tactic.
Do you think if we do shut down, again, we're recording this at a time when we don't know, but if we do shut down, how long do we think it'll last?
Oh, Lindsay, nobody knows. I don't know.
Can we come to a compromise at that point? I mean, somebody has to give here.
It depends on who it's benefiting. Let's be honest here. If the government does shut down at midnight Eastern time tonight, then one party or the other will stand to benefit. If it's Democrats, then trust me, Republicans in the House will find a way to get the government funded again, ASAP. However, if public opinion turns against House Democrats, right, for the shutdown, then I'm pretty sure that House Republicans will find a way to prolong the shutdown and make it painful and make it something voters do not forget before the midterms.
Folks, just wanted to chime in real quick here on a topic we had mentioned just slightly earlier in this discussion, the idea of separately voting on the extension of the Obamacare tax credits. South Dakota Senator Mike Rounds has come out this morning in support of a proposal to do exactly that. And just a few weeks earlier, Senator Murkowski from Alaska has signaled her support for that. So that does seem to be gaining some momentum. And I think a few Republicans speaking to Politico did say they see that as a way to break the shutdown. So I think there is momentum behind that. The one other thing I wanted to sort of offer on this discussion is I think the idea that you could kind of see holding firm on these healthcare demands and risking a shutdown as Democrats kind of making good on some of the talk around the original Big Beautiful Bill, right? This idea that those cuts were so, so untenable to them then and that it was going to be so unpopular among voters that now when they have an opportunity to actually put their foot down, I think they want to be seen as doing something. So that, to me, does put a little more momentum behind the idea that they are not going to flinch on this.
Interesting. We'll have to wait and see. I want to take it locally just a minute and talk in terms of as if the government had shut down. Leah, let me start with you. How does this impact Utah? We know we've got our Mighty Five. We know we have troops here. We've got Hill Air Force Base workers. We've got IRS workers. What do you see this looking like for Utah?
Don't you think the biggest issue, Lindsay, will be national parks? I mean, I think... you know, tourism is a major, mainstay in our...
$3.1 billion in 2024.
Right, big part of our revenue, big part of making sure people come to Utah. We all kind of like to brag, right, about people wanting to visit here. So I think that parks, right, Lindsay, has to be the biggest issue. And because to a certain extent... I feel like military is not as expendable, and not that the parks are expendable, but like I worry less about Hill Air Force Base because I think the government's always going to make sure the military is funded at least well enough to keep going, whereas the national parks feels like a luxury, right? So the government could say, this is an expendable, nice thing, and we can shut this down and at the margins save some money as we're going. So I'm more worried about that.
Taylor, do you see the state stepping up to help fund the national parks they have in the past?
Yeah, they have in the past. The state legislature has set aside a pool of money. I'm not certain exactly how much is left in that pool right now. Producer Peter, I don't know if you can look into that, throwing that on you right now. On the hot seat. In the past, they've appropriated up to $5 million to be set aside in a fund dedicated to making sure that in the event of a federal government shutdown, Utah could keep its national parks open. With limited services, of course. The State Office of Tourism has already this week promised that it's committed to keeping those parks open in the event that there is a federal government shutdown. You both have mentioned that Utah's national parks are a huge economic driver in our state. That is absolutely true, especially in rural Utah and southwestern, southeastern Utah. These national parks are absolutely key to the economy. I was just in Zion National Park over the weekend, and I'll tell you what, Springdale and even Mount Carmel, Orderville, Kanab, Panguitch, these cities are booming. They are bustling with tourists, with people spending money, going out to eat, shopping. I'll tell you what, I couldn't even find a parking spot just to go to dinner in Springdale. It is so popular right now. So clearly there is a need to keep these national parks open. And I believe the state will do that.
I've got some visitors in town from Sweden who are planning to go to our national parks this weekend, and I really don't want to have to break the news to them that they can't go. So, and I believe, Taylor, that's what the Office of Tourism has said, is people are planning their lives around coming to these national parks, and we need to find a way to keep them open. So, interestingly, the Utah House of Representatives wrote a letter to the Senate, to both Republican and Democratic leaders in the Senate. So not just John Curtis and Mike Lee, but Chuck Grassley and other leaders, right, in the Senate. And basically said the solution is on the table. Senate Democrats supported the same extension. So talking about, you know, the funding of the government just 6 months ago. It ensures stability for service members and veterans, keeps low-income assistance programs running, and protects state economies from needless turmoil. Again, these House Republicans urging Congress to figure this out so yeah. that...
And I'm sure that all members of the U.S. House read that letter very carefully and pondered it.
Are you being facetious right now?
Yes, I'm being sarcastic because
anytime... Because we all know a letter to a senator
anytime
goes
a state legislature advises the federal legislature, I'm not so sure Congress... cares a lot.
Do it like Utah. We have to balance our budget, they often say.
We are so much better right? and smarter than you. That here's what you should do.
Yeah. That goes over well.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome, Congress.
It is very true. Okay, so here's a question. Do you think the state will step up in any areas other than national parks?
Ooh, that is a good question. Obviously, our national parks... I think perhaps maybe other federal infrastructure that supports those areas, whether it's, you know, the BLM, other resources. I'm not certain what other programs.
Medicaid assistance programs.
I don't know about that.
Also maybe Veterans Affairs
Veterans
programs,
Affairs,
right?
Medicaid, Medicare.
CHIP. There,
to be honest, this is the issue with the shutdown. There are so many consequences of a federal government shutdown in Utah that it's really hard to predict what would happen. There have been threats of shutdowns looming all the time, constantly, but it's been over a decade since it's actually happened. So it's a lot of us guessing what will happen, what the implications will be. So it's really hard to know.
Do you remember off the top of your head how long that 2018 one lasted? I remember it being quite a while. Couple weeks, months.
Ooh, have there been two? I'm thinking of 2013, and was there one in 2018 as well?
Yeah, it was 2018, 2019, and that is when Utah funded the national parks.
Right. That's right. Okay, yeah. So we've had a few of these over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. But it hasn't happened in 7 years. Peter, do you have facts
yes,
for us?
So cutting in here, it actually seems like the number is a little uncertain, how much money we do have set aside for this time. Reading a report from this morning where the spokesperson for the Department of Tourism was quoted as saying that the funding situation is evolving. In the 2024.
That's code for we don't know.
That sounds like my bank account in
college. Yeah, exactly. My household funding is evolving.
My paycheck is evolving.
Yeah. In 24, that fund was set at about $3 million.
Okay.
When they were anticipating a government shutdown at that time. I'll see if I can find a more specific number from the legislature to include in the description, should viewers like to follow along.
This sounds like Great. We need to do some reporting on how much is left in that fund and will we dip into it and how much. This time around. Okay, let's change topics, shall we? This week, Governor Spencer Cox was on 60 Minutes on CBS. Pretty powerful interview, said some pretty emotional things. Really, the nation is touting him as a hero in the wake of a leader in the wake of the Charlie Kirk shooting. Your guys' take on this interview, what did you glean from it? Anything new you learned about Governor Cox, or did you think it was just, you know, seizing the moment, if you will?
So much to say about this here. I'll be brief. But I think first and foremost, Spencer Cox is not a new topic or conversation for him. 4 years, Governor Spencer Cox has been out there with his Disagree Better campaign, doing TED Talks, doing television appearances, interviews, all focused on encouraging all of us Americans and Utahns, voters, to disagree better when it comes to divisive issues and political rhetoric. Now, unfortunately, with the tragic assassination of Charlie Kirk, people are paying more attention to the value of his message.
Leah?
Yeah, no, I loved, how did he answer in that interview, Lindsay, when he said, I'm just trying to get people to stop shooting each other. So the response to, I think it was Stephen Bannon, quoted as saying that he was a national embarrassment.
And like, yeah, you know, he said he gets attacked from the right for this campaign.
Spencer Cox was like, fine, he can say that. I just would like people to stop shooting each other. And oh my gosh, a little bit when I saw that, I thought whatever party he forms or becomes, I might just join. Because a little bit, I think the nation needs to hear, right, that rational with compassion kind of understanding. And the conversation with the Democratic governor, I think from New Mexico, and correct me if I've got that wrong, and they were kind of talking about, right, abortion and their positions on it, but how they can talk about this well and how they can disagree and agree on maybe we should be taking care of families. Modeling Lindsay and Taylor, like in that interview, mm-hmm. how you actually could do this work, I had major respect for that And a little bit, I thought he was running for president, and maybe he says he wasn't, but I was like, man, I'd vote for him.
Yeah. Well, and I just want to bring up some criticism I saw. I know it's very kumbaya for Governor Cox right now, but as a journalist, that's my job, is to bring up, you know, issues, right? I saw some criticism of Governor Cox when he made that abortion comment on 60 Minutes. The Democratic governor of New Mexico has actually implemented free child care for their state, and he was saying, Cox was saying, we agree on, you know, more support for single mothers, right, on the abortion issue, right? So they may not agree on abortion itself, but they agree on how to support moms and women. That criticism pointed out that Governor Cox has not done that. Taylor, do you think Governor Cox is putting action behind this disagree better and these words that he's saying?
I think so. He is. No one is perfect, right? But I do think that this is the best version of Spencer Cox. This is the version of Spencer Cox that myself and many other Utahns, Democrats, Independents, Republicans, all have voted for in the past. We have seen this in Spencer Cox, right? And I've been critical of Governor Cox on this show in the past.
I know he chastised you for that.
I think
he watches.
Governor, I am sorry for calling you caffeine-free Spencer Cox. I apologize. but you know, this is a fully caffeinated, you know, maybe even a little bit of a pump of flavor shot in there too.
Some cherry coke.
Yeah, this is the Spencer Cox that I think many of us here in Utah saw, that we really were optimistic and hopeful about. This is who he is. Now, has he been perfect? No. But I do think the root of any weakness or any mistakes, missteps, anything that he has said perhaps that is off-brand, I think it all comes down to Spencer Cox's desire for everyone to like him, and for him to be able to work with everyone. Unfortunately, in politics, it's impossible for everyone to like you. So I want more of the boldly agreeable Spencer Cox going forward. And, you know, his critics are not going to pick up steam by just criticizing his you know, where they disagree in this way, if he's always trying to find common ground.
Yeah. Right, and also I would just kind of add to that, Lindsay, and to your question, the governor of New Mexico lives in an entirely different political ecosystem than Governor Cox does.
True.
So it's unfair to criticize him that he couldn't get through a policy in the same way that she would in her state. Yeah. The point is about the conversation and how he respects people he disagrees with, right? So a little bit, I feel like that criticism's
unfair.
A touch off the mark.
It completely highlights the whole point.
Right.
Right?
Okay, we have 1 minute left, and the final topic I just want you to hit on in less than 30 seconds is that Charlie Kirk's Turning Point USA organization and tour is coming back to Utah for the first time since he's been murdered. We know that Governor Cox will be there. We know that Mike Lee will send a video message. What do you guys make of this tour stop, the people who are speaking at it? What does it mean for the state of Utah?
I mean, I think I will just say that my students up at Weber State, who have been very sad about what happened and kind of shell-shocked about what happened, from a very personal point of view, Lindsay, when they come to a campus and the students can kind of see politics is normal, or do you know what I mean? Like, we're doing this still. Mm-hmm. All of that, I think, helps us move past it, helps students heal about it. So I think that has a good impact on our state, specifically for students.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. And I think it's incredible that Turning Point is continuing the tour and the conversation. I think Turning Point will become even bigger and more influential than it ever has been in the past. And I think all that is because of, unfortunately, the assassination of Charlie Kirk.
We will have to leave it there for today. Taylor Morgan, Leah Murray, thank you for your insights today. We certainly appreciate it. We appreciate you for watching, finding us, whether you're on News for Utah Plus or on YouTube or Facebook or Instagram, X, wherever you find this episode. We're grateful you're watching. Thanks for being here this week, and we will see you next time.
Bye.